నిత్యాం భగవత్ సేవయ భగవతి సమశ్లోకే భక్తి భావతి నైస్తికీ. జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యనంద శ్రీద్వైత గరాశివాసది గో భక్త వృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే. హరే కృష్ణ శ్రీ కృష్ణ హరే హరే. హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. హరే కృష్ణ శ్రీ కృష్ణ హరే హరే. హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. వంచికాపత రూప దిశా కీప సింధు వేవచా పతిత నామ పావేవ్యో వైష్ణవేవ్యో నమో నమః. కంటిన్యుయేషన్ రీడింగ్ Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 4, Text Number 26. The Hamsa Gunya, Guya Prayers. Yado Paramo Manaso Nama Rupa Rupasya Drishta Smriti Sampamosa యా ఇయతే కేవలయ స్వా సంశయ హంసయా తస్మై సూచి సాత్మనే నమః. When one's consciousness is completely purified by the contamination of material existence, gross and subtle, without being agitated as in the waking and dreaming state, and when the mind is not dissolved as in susupti, deep sleep, one comes to the platform of trance. Then one's material vision and the memories of the mind which manifest names, forms are vanquished. Only in such a trance is the Supreme Personality of Godhead revealed. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seen in that uncontaminated transcendental state. Report by Srila Prabhupada. There are two stages of God realization. One is called sunnayam, or very easily understood, generally by mental speculation. And the other is called durnayam, understood only with difficulty. Paramatma realization and Brahman realization are considered sunyam, but realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is durnayam. As described here, one attains the ultimate realization of the Personality of Godhead when one gives up the activities of the mind, thinking, feeling, and willing, or in other words, when mental speculation stops. This transcendental realization is above susupti, deep sleep. In our gross, conditional stage, we perceive things through material experiences and remembrances. And in the subtle stage, we perceive the world in dreams. The process of vision also involves remembrance and also exists in the subtle form. Above gross experience is dreams. This is susupti, deep sleep. And when one comes to the complete spiritual platform, transcending deep sleep, he attains trance, the Vasudev Sattva platform, in which the Personality of Godhead is revealed. Atta Sri Krishna Namani Na Bhavaret Kriyam Indriya Indriye. As long as one is situated in duality on the central platform, gross or subtle realization of the original Personality of Godhead is impossible. Seva Mukhe Hi Jivaro Swayam Eva Sparati Irha. But when one engages his senses in the service of the Lord, specifically when one engages the tongue in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and tasting only Krishna prasad with the spirit of service, Supreme Personality of Godhead is revealed. This is indicated in the verse by the word suchi sadmane. Suchi means purified. By the spirit of rendering service with one's senses, one's entire existence becomes suchi satma, the platform of uncontaminated purity. Daksha therefore offers his respectful obeisances unto the Personality of Godhead, who is revealed on the platform of suchi sadhanama. In this regard, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti the court quotes the following prayer by Lord Brahma. in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:146. Tathapi gunam mani magunasya devi bharuram arhati yamalata atma bi. Translation: one whose heart has become completely purified, my Lord, can understand the transcendental qualities of your Lordship and can understand the greatness of your activities. So as we continue on with these prayers, we're seeing some expression about different states of consciousness. Susupti, the deep dream state. In Vedic epistemology, there's four basic states. There's the jagrat, the waking state. There's the swapana, the dream state. The susupti, the deep dream state. And the turiya, or the vasudeva platform, transcendental platform of seeing God face to face. Significant is how to access the deeper states of consciousness. It has a lot to do with mindfulness. We see the mind is our greatest friend or our greatest enemy. The mind is engaged in sankalpa, vikalpa, accepting something, rejecting and accepting. Mind is controlled particularly by sharp intelligence. The mind is controlled. Normally the mind is making some demand, the senses are making some demand, orders the mind, and the mind tries to fulfill. So we often want to try to take inventory, to take notice of what is happening with the mind. Because as we're thinking, then we start feeling, wishing, feeling, and acting upon such thoughts. As we're thinking, we're becoming. As we are becoming, we get more and more of that as we put more energy into such. So often it's good that we monitor ourselves to get a better understanding why certain things are happening within our lives, or why aggregately things are happening based on the aggregate thought and mindset process. Sometimes we might find ourselves being quite shocked if we just look at our minds for 1 week, for 1 day, even for a few hours, and see the kind of things that we are thinking about. Sometimes we're shocked to see how little we're really thinking about Krishna's service, but more perhaps about our own service. How much the mind is captured in just the basic things of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. I was just reflecting on how sometimes our whole pattern of functioning we see is in accord to how we, of course, codify and perceive things, what boundaries we set. I was looking at my mind, I was understanding why I'm such a neophyte. I was seeing how everything is functioning around eating and sleeping. I was thinking how 4:30, just looking at time, 4:30 means 4 or 5 hours before first prasadam. 1:30 means an hour, 12 o'clock means an hour and a half before prasadam. 7 o'clock means 3 hours before taking rest. So hopefully your mind isn't like that, but it's more geared about how you increase the quality and quantity of your service. But sometimes we'll be shocked. We may want to take notice. Well, Krishna says distinctly, always think of me. Mam mana mava mad bhakto. Majaji mam namaskar. But he said, but he explains the difficulty. Mame bam so jivan ok. Jiva bhutha sanatana. Manasistani indiani pakatistani karsati. That this mind, along with the senses, so much pulling, the vagas are so much there. And so living entity is suffering due to the senses being so dominant and giving the orders to the mind to do its particular bidding. But in Bhagavad Gita chapter 12, Krishna says, but always think of me. But that is not easy. Because if we always think of Krishna, that is the Vasudeva platform. It's not the jagrat, just the normal mundane orthodox waking state, or swapana, or susipti. But the Lord, knowing that is difficult because we allow so many obstacles to interfere, then he says, somehow, if you're letting obstacles interfere, you're not always thinking of me, it's okay. Then engage in the process of sadhana bhakti, the process of bhakti yoga that brings one to the platform where they are always thinking of Krishna, thinking of him. But then Krishna is so kind, so encompassing, that he says, but for some reason, if you're not thinking of me all the time, so many other things are there as priority, for some reason you don't have the faith or determination to follow the process of Siddhanta Bhakti, don't go away. Don't give up. But work for me. There are many who are following the process of Siddhanta Bhakti, and there are some who are always thinking of me, serve those, and you will gradually get the benefit because bhakti spills over. It says maya spills over. Bhakti is contagious. And so where there's bhakti, it spills over. So be with those, work with those, and get influenced by their association, by their devotion, by their determination. But Krishna says, if for some reason you have trouble in relating to those who are working for me, you have no faith in those who are working for me, you're not eager to assist those, Krishna says, then do your own work, but give up the fruits of that work and offer that to me. And the Lord says, but for some reason, if laziness is there, if insecurity is there, insensitivity, if dullness, if you don't even want to do your own work, then at least engage in the process of meditating, reflecting, introspection, so that you can somehow come to the point to know why you must do your own work or work with those who are working for me, or that you must engage in the process of bhakti, or that you should come and always think of me. And then the Lord says, if you're not even ready to do that, don't run away, don't give up. Don't think that I am not for you. Don't think that everything is not really resting on me, because everything is. Mataparatananyat, kintirasti dhananjaya, mayit saramiram proktam sutra managaniva. Everything is there. Then Krishna says, engage in acquiring knowledge. Why? Because at least if there is honesty, even in acquiring knowledge, whatever branch of discipline of knowledge that one investigates, whether it's history, politics, science, geometry, literature, it doesn't matter. If one is honest, one will come to spiritual conclusions. One will begin to understand ontological, epistemological, cosmological, axiological concerns, the nature of truth, the nature of reality, the nature of beauty. These are all spiritual propositions, ultimately. So Krishna is so kind, and he said, come on, everyone has a chance. Just take advantage of such. But a difficulty in doing these things, especially always thinking of Krishna, is removing the seeds of the material desires. Sometimes we check the gross sinful activities, but we do not get uproot the seed. Just like when Lord Chaitanya is cleaning the Gandicha temple. So first they do the gross cleaning. They don't leave it as that. Then they go back and start getting refined, getting the more subtler things. So this is very much the position of our spiritual life. We follow the four basic rules and regulations that establishes us on the human platform, hopefully the sattvic platform, but then we have to go for the subtle. So in our spiritual progression, it is not normally so vertical. Sometimes we come in with a lot of sukriti, jnana sukriti, a lot of credits from our previous life, and we seem to move very, very vertically. But usually we move, and then there are certain things we have to work out. We advance, and then we reach certain levels, certain plateaus, where we have to start now focusing in more on some of the subtler things to remove those, to move on and on and on in our progression. Now, you do not hear this one in your Bhakti class 101, but actually, as we go on in our devotional life, it becomes more difficult. I didn't say harder, but more difficult. As we go on in our advancement, the experience becomes more difficult, but if our foundation is strong, that difficulty does not become an interference or does not bring stagnation. But it brings realization, it brings exhilaration, it brings more and more commitment and divine unfoldment. But of course, the studies, the tests you have in primary or secondary school are not as difficult as those in the university or postgraduate. That is to be expected. But if your foundation is not sufficient, if your weaponry, or if you're not having proper sadhana, if you're not having proper healthy association, if there's too many weeds and aparads and too much faithlessness, too much mixed devotion, then as the things become more difficult, then also they become harder for one, and one can even become an embarrassment, a failure. But what makes the difference? The difference is changing the heart. As the heart is changed, as the background is strong, the foundation is strong, the determination, then even when there are more difficulties, we will not see dullness, stagnation, falls, downs, and deviations. But we will see more and more wisdom unfolding, wisdom coming out, more and more mature devotion, more and more accessing of the bhakti culture as the complexities begin to unfold and bring about more sense of unity with diversity, more and more intense appreciation of the various flavors of the bhakti. I want to just read very briefly two or three passages, quotes, where Bhagavatam and a few other scriptures emphasizing about the necessity of being able to cleanse the heart and to give Krishna one's heart. More and more these days we're seeing how Krishna is Atmaram. He is not needing anything, but he is wanting to give us fully his love, and he wants fully our love, so he wants us to give our hearts. Surrender is not really so much based on what you do. That is there. Not based on so much what you give. That is there. But it's based on what you are holding back. Otherwise, we become confused. We see so much things happening, and then we see also sometimes so many problems. Or we see fall down. It is not, because Krishna knows our ataka, yataka, or yata arika. He knows our abilities. He knows what we are having. And he is doing what? He is hiding in the heart. I think the other day someone was saying, the verse that appears more than any other verse in folio is 15:15. Why is that? Sarvasya ham sannivisto mattak smitya jnanam apohanam cha vedishatra ham vedanta kriyat vedavyat eva chaham. Why? Is that verse appearing more? Because this is the secret. This is the spiritual mystique that Krishna is hiding there in the heart. And he is there waiting for us to find him in full. He is just that close and at the same time just that far away. Why does Prabhupada quote that verse more than any other particular verse? Showing us how much, how personal Krishna is, how Krishna's mercy is so pervasive that he is there in everyone's heart, but at the same time, how much insanity the living entity has that Krishna is so available, but how we so expertly deny Krishna's presence. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.21 purport, it says, as soon as Krishna's sun is arisen within one's heart, the darkness of material speculation about the absolute truth and the living beings are at once cleared off. In the presence of the sun, the darkness cannot stand, and the relative truths that were hidden within the dense darkness of ignorance become clearly manifested by the mercy of Krishna, who is residing in everyone's heart as the super soul. Therefore, on account of the personality of Godhead taking charge of illuminating the heart of his devotees, certainly a devotee engaged in his service in transcendental love cannot remain in darkness about everything in the absolute and the relative truth. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.11. Sri Narada's instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, the purport. Here, if there is a change of heart of the leaders only, the secular and core spiritual, certainly there will be a radical change in the atmosphere of the world's civilization. Bhagavad Gita 3.4, purport. Without purification of the heart, sannyas is simply a disturbance to the social order. In Srimad Bhagavatam 6.2.3, discussion Ajamil delivered by the Vishnu Dutas, 6.2.32, I'm sorry. One who constantly hears and chants the holy name of the Lord, let me read this one instead. Bhagavatam 11.20.31, I should go a little shorter. Pure devotional service surpasses knowledge. Although a sincere devotee has surrendered heart and soul in loving service to the Lord, there may be lingering material attachments talking about the seed of sin not fully taken out, that prevents the devotee from perfectly realizing transcendental knowledge. Devotional service, however, will automatically eradicate such lingering attachments in due course of time. If it is proper devotional service, tesham satata yuktanam, bhajatam priti purvakam, idami buddhi yogana, yena mabhayanti, when one worships consistently with devotion, with love, there is danger, Prabhupada goes on to say, if the devotee tries to purify himself through cultivation of knowledge and renunciation, which falls outside of the scope of devotional service, outside of Sadhu Shastra Guru, there is danger of his being deviated from the Lord's lotus feet. Fall down means one removes himself from Krishna's protection. One removes himself from the protection of the parampara. And therefore, the sign that one has removed himself is the effects of Kali or Maya attacking. One who endeavors for purification outside of loving service to the Lord has not actually understood the transcendental potency of bhakti yoga and does not appreciate the extent of Lord Krishna's mercy. So we deviate outside of the path of bhakti properly, then it shows that we are not appreciating Krishna's mercy and we will not sufficiently change the heart. See, the heart, even as a physical organ, physiologically, the heart in one day, 10,000 quarts of blood are pumped through the heart. A lifespan of about 50 years, 48 million gallons of blood. So it's interesting that Krishna hides out in that particular area of our particular physiognomy. Because the heart is one of the most important organs. So Krishna is letting us know he can be found as we understand the most essential aspects of reality of life. He's letting us know that as that vital organ is maintaining so much of life, so much of the different functions of the body, he's not hiding out in the hand. He didn't say, give your hand, give your mind, give your leg. But he's emphasizing that he is in everyone's heart, and from him is coming knowledge as well as forgetfulness, but according to the aggregate of our own desires. We are so much more responsible for whatever is happening to ourselves and our environment, much more than we're normally ready to admit. So, the Prachetas, we see that they're very angry. They've come out and they're seeing that so many things are going wrong. But we see that a sadhu can become angry, but not for himself. A sadhu is tatikshiva, karunika, suruti, sante. Sadhu is tolerant. We have to take closer notice to have proper sadhu sangha by being more clear in what constitutes a sadhu. And where we see sadhus, we should relish and take a shelter of such. So a sadhu, he is merciful. He's tolerant. He's not making enemies and friends. Even when others see themselves as his enemies, he does not play into such. One cannot be a sadhu who's playing into holding grudges. One cannot be a sadhu who is making so much distinction of the dualities of enemies and friends and part friend and greatest enemy. This is all part of the material, the mahatattva, that keeps one incarcerated material bodies lifetime after lifetime. And a sadhu, of course, is most importantly attached to Krishna. So in the Hitopadesha, it mentions that there are eight different qualities, different categories that are distinct as one pursues the process of religion. But four categories, the first four are even practiced even by impersonalists or by demons even. But the last four cannot, because sometimes demons or sometimes people with full of so much mixed devotional service parade as sadhus and not having rich, mature sadhu quality. So we share those with you. First is the performance of sacrifices, one of the basic tenets of religiosity. Second is the study, of course, of scriptures. Three is giving in charity. Four is the performing of austerities. Five is speaking truthfully. Six is being patient. Seven is sacrificing, practicing forgiveness. And eight is not being greedy. Now these first four are practiced by devotees, are practiced by religionists, but are also practiced by demons. Sacrifices, studying of different types of scriptures, giving in charity, performing austerities. But the last four are practiced by bhaktas, are practiced by devotees. And we see that these are not in place. We understand there's something wrong with the devotion. What are the last four? Speaking truthfully. One who is not a proper sadhu, we will notice, will not speak truthfully. Demons, devotees, speak truthfully. Second of these four is patience. Although a devotee is very eager for Krishna's mercy, but the devotee is feeling that they are not actually worthy. And so they realize that things are happening by Krishna according to his desire, his design, based on as we surrender. So he understands that. Three, practicing forgiveness. Someone who does not forgive, it cannot be proper sadhu. And we're not talking about situational ethics. Now the world is being moved by so much situational ethics. You do what you want by the moment. We forgive, but when there is a crime, there must be punishment concomitant to the degree of the crime along with forgiveness. So that as there is punishment, it makes it clear this is not to be honored by the community, and it sends a message to the person that the person is to change their act. When there is not sufficient punishment, it reinforces the sin that the individual, him or herself, engages in, and it sends a message to the community that such things are tolerated or okay, or such things are accepted as a normative pattern. And therefore, these four. And last is not being greedy. Sadhu is not egocentric, is not selfish, thinking of himself. But he has the loyalty, he has the greed in trying to get Krishna's mercy so he can distribute it to others. He has the greed in wanting to see others receive the mercy, the love, and the blessings and the protection, but not himself. So, a few other short points. So we see in the Manu Samhita, it mentions about sadhu, it mentions about the leaders of the sadhus, it mentions about a king, it mentions how a king or a leader should know their constituents, should know the praja as well as a mother knows her children, and should take care of them to that same extent. It mentions, and I read this from Srimad Bhagavatam 5.7.4, purport. Although formerly the government was a monarchy, all the kings were affectionate toward the citizens, and they strictly kept them engaged in their respective duties. Therefore, society was very smoothly conducted. So when the kings are proper in their service and engaging people properly, affectionately, then so much smoothness is there. One of the last conversations I had with Srila Prabhupada, and I was working in the communist countries, and he was emphasizing to us that if the leaders do not change, then the people would not have grain, would not have wheat. I cannot understand what that had to do with these basic commodities. But we see when the leaders are affectionate and engaging people, that even just some of the natural resources are influenced. Now we see all over the world, we see earthquakes, tornadoes, famines, droughts, hurricanes. We see so many different types of changes going on. It tells us a lot about what is happening as people are claiming proprietorship rather than trying to recognize that everything belongs to Krishna. Krishna is too, Bhagavan Swayam. So in the case of Daksha, he created the demons, created the demigods, created the humans, created the plants, but then later he became very discouraged, very disappointed. So what did he do? Sometimes we do things, we arrange things, we're absorbing things, we become very disappointed. So he did not give up, but he gave in, not to the Maya, but more to the devotion. And so he took sannyas. So that doesn't mean we take sannyas when things get difficult and we leave. But he took sannyas with austerity. And what most important did he do? He went into deep prayer. When we find ourselves often and problems are there and so much confusion, then we have to bring in more of the conscious factor. We have to bring in more of the mindfulness that addresses the heart and attracts Krishna, who's hiding out, to come forward. When we become more mindful, when we engage in very intense prayer, what we're actually saying is that we no longer want to be dominated by our senses. We no longer want to be motivated just by our intelligence. We no longer want to do things that are sociologically or rationally correct or politically correct. We want to do things that are transcendentally sound, that are transcendentally profound. We want to do things in such a way that we move ourselves outside of the picture and let Krishna use us. There's sometimes when things are so complex, when there's so many varieties of confusions and difficulties, that it may be beyond just normal practical means to try to make some adjustments. Doesn't mean that we give up and just say it's up to Krishna. No, we go more deeper. We do not give up, but we give in. We give in more to letting Krishna do the necessary. So there are 10 different types of prayers. I've listed that in a little book I have outside. I just wanted to share with you that Vaishnavas relate to, because prayer is an essential aspect. We say Sravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. The process of Vandanam, of prayer, is so essential, because more important than what we do with our bodies, what we do with our senses, is the quality of the mind. More important is that we're reading about the gross and the subtle, that one has to bypass the jagrat, the swapana, the susupti, the deep sleep, and go into the trance state, where it means that everything is flowing according to Krishna's design. We're not interfering with Krishna's arrangements. We're not blocking Krishna's love. We're not interfering with Krishna's ability to do the most organic, but we align ourselves to the elements for that. So these 10 different types of prayer. First is called Shamprathanamika, words of direct prayer to the Lord. So here is an opportunity that we can actually directly connect with the Lord. This is not sahajya. It is sahajya when we're thinking that the Lord is directly speaking to us and we are not of that state and not qualified. But we can always speak to the Lord because Krishna is always there. And so we go and we speak, we pray to the deities. We have darshan. What is it really? It is praying to the deities and honoring the deities and worshiping the deities and asking for forgiveness as we're in these material bodies. This material body means that we have made a commitment to run away from Krishna's divine loving pastimes. And so now we're trying to run toward. Two, Swadanyana Bodhika, words informing the Lord of one's humility. Krishna in the heart, he knows how genuine we are as we try to position ourselves, asking for forgiveness and having a state of humility. Mana Shiksha, instructions to one's mind. The mind is like an enemy right near us who knows all of our greatest weaknesses and specifically will attack us. Maya will specifically attack us wherever we are weak. So therefore we should understand where there's weakness is where we have to give more attention, because it is in those alignments that Maya is going to attack and try to destroy, where Kali is going to make big assaults. Vilapamika, statements of extreme lamentation. Five, Vaishnava Mahimam Prakasika, statements revealing the glories of the Lord's devotees, appreciating Sadhu Sangha, glorifying the devotees. Six, Sri Guru Vaishnava Vignapati Rupa, supplications made to one's spiritual master and unto the devotees of the Lord. Seven, Sridham Vase Lipsamika, statements revealing the desire to live in the holy places of the Lord, where the Lord's pastimes are going on. Eight, Sahaka Deha Lakshi Sukha, prayers revealing desire to execute regulated devotional service in the body of a practicing devotee. And the last two, Siddha Dehe Lalashmai, prayers revealing desires to execute spontaneous devotional service in the perfect spiritual body. And Asepa Bohika, prayers revealing intense grief and sorrow in which one blames oneself for falling into the material world. So as these prayers are there, it's like a summon of trying to connect with Krishna, who is hiding out, but hiding mischievously, waiting to see who is going to find him, who is going to move out the way and let him come forward. We see some of the great prayers, just like Sri Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he plays in his Rudanti prayer. He says, another day has gone by, and I have not surrendered yet to Krishna. He says very mercifully, with great destitution, where can I go? What should I do? Who can help me? Or we see as Draupadi, when she was being unrobed, and there were all of these Maharathas all around her, but no one, not one of them could help her. And what did she do? She did not give up, but she gave in. She gave in fully to Krishna. I am yours. Fully giving the heart. When Prahlad was being tortured by his own father in some of the most vicious and heinous ways, he did not give up. He did not question the Lord's mercy. He did not think, this is too much. My own father is so much trying to destroy me. But he simply went on with prayers of glorification, of appreciation, and had a mentality of consistent mercy. When Brahma was confused and was wondering, how is it that this cowherd boy who's running around with his face dirty and playing a little flute, how is that he's my boss? All the wonderful things that I'm doing, all the power that I have, how can he be my boss? But then he prays in a great sense of humility. It's Vada Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anari Nari Govinda Sarva Karma Karanam. That there are many Isvaras, but there is a supreme Paramisvara. We see that Runti Dev, even though he had underwent such a tremendous fast, he was a king and he was doing, living a very life of simplicity and devotion, even though so much opulence was there, so much manipulation of material things was there. Although he was committing himself to such a life of austerity, when the Brahmin came, and then the Sudra and the Chandala, each of them, he gave his food to them eagerly. He did not think, how is it I am doing your work and you're making it so difficult for me? I am giving myself to you. Why do you bring in so much complexities? But he did eagerly, gave what he had. And when the devas who were coming to him in disguise manifest themselves and they asked him, what did he want? He was simply in a prayerful, deep prayerful state. Simply allow me to always be able to remember you, to glorify you in such ways. When Koresh was tortured, as they wanted to kill Ramanuja, and he was blinded, and he was asked to go and to serve and to pray to Vadraj, the deity, by Ramanujacharya. And as he engaged in such intense devotion, such selfless, unmotivated, uninterrupted service, and when the deity requested his desire, what did he pray? Please forgive those who have done this. Not only forgive them, but give them liberation. Such intense fixity, devotion, how give themselves all, because the heart is given over and Krishna is in the heart, is manifesting in such ways. And then we see the Lord Chaitanya in his Sushastakam prayers. I know no one but Krishna is my Lord. He shall always remain as such, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace, even if he makes me brokenhearted by not being before me, he shall always remain my worshipful Lord unconditionally. And Advaitacharya, he, in the most emphatic way, he is emphasizing, you have sent me, you've sent some before me, but things have become so crazy, things are so complex. Dharma is being given up. Sanatana Dharma is definitely being pushed aside. Your religion is becoming very dominant. And he says, you are going to have to come yourself. And he engages in intense worship, an intense prayer, to invoke Lord Chaitanya to come down. And he is saying, and as he is having such intensity and such compassion and such mercy, and there his heart is fully given. So what happens? Not only Krishna does not come down as Madhava, but Raja comes with him, and is most prominent, his Ladini Shakti potency, the potency of devotion, the mother of devotion, the potency of the greatest manifestation of mercy, of compassion. So Krishna comes in the form of Mahaprabhu, of Lord Chaitanya, to be able to extend that in such a way that he interacts with the devotees, he eats with the devotees, he talks with the devotees, he leads the brigade himself by dispersing that particular love. So in conclusion, we are trying to be on time so we finish our meetings in time. I want to just emphasize two or three short points. See, we do not know always what the future will be. If we look around, we see so many devotees in so many places in the world, so many wonderful soldiers and generals doing their different activities in different countries. So we do not know next year, the person who's on your right, on your left, in front of you, behind you, or even yourself, we do not know if we're going to be here. We see people getting sick, chronic diseases, We see people leaving their bodies every year, our devotees. We find people also falling prey to all kinds of sense gratification, as they are particularly minimizing the subtleties. We may stop the gross things, but if we don't check the subtle things begin to aggregate, and they get stronger and stronger, and they begin to manifest. And especially when the aparatas are there, or the ego, we see of all the elements, bhumiya po nalo vaya kama buddha evacha, that of all the elements, ahankara, the false ego, is the most difficult. And so sometimes we advance, we get to certain levels. And if we don't deal with that false ego, we begin to then de-escalate, and we'll find ourselves in tremendous stagnation. So we don't know who is going to be next that's going to fall prey to that Kali, fall prey to that Maya. But we have a duty to pray for each other, a duty to bring the Lord under heart. But he's not to give this story of a monkey and an alligator. And the monkey is in the tree. And the alligator invites the monkey down. The alligator tells the monkey that, come, my wife wants to meet you. The monkey jumps on the alligator's back. And as the alligator is moving down the river, the monkey decides to question, why does your wife want to meet me? And the alligator says, she wants to eat out your heart. And the monkey said, oh, no problem. You should have told me that. Let me go. I left my heart in the tree. Let me go back and get the heart. And so when the alligator takes the monkey back to the tree, the monkey, of course, jumps and runs away. But his aunt explains, we must be careful not to give our hearts anything other than Krishna.